Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. As you know, there are dozens of eye conditions that you hear about these days. Well, today I will bring you an organized list, a glossary, if you will, of just some of those. I'll start with A and just head towards Z. There will be a brief explanation of each term as we go along, but we'll take a little in-depth diversion for one of the A's, one of the B's, and one of the C's. So here we go with the ABCs of vision conditions. The information came from the American Optometric Association. It's found at www.aoa.org. And once again, the title is A Glossary of Common Eye and Vision Conditions. The first one is acanthamoeba. How about if I spell that to start out with? A-C-A-N-T-H-A-M-O-E-B-A. Acanthamoeba is one of the most common organisms in the environment, but it rarely causes infections. One infection called acanthamoeba keratitis, when this does occur, it can threaten your vision. The best defense against acanthamoeba keratitis infection is proper contact lens hygiene. And now we're going to take the first of our in-depth diversions to find out more about that acanthamoeba topic. Recently, there have been increasing reports of acanthamoeba keratitis, which is a co-infection of acanthamoeba with a bacterial keratitis. This infection commonly occurs in the contact lens case and on the cornea, complicating prevention, diagnosis, and treatment. Some of the symptoms you might have read: frequently painful eye infection that doesn't improve with traditional treatment. You also might feel like something is in your eye, excessive tearing, light sensitivity, and blurred vision. You might also have the symptom of red irritated eyes that last for an unusually long time after removing your contact lenses. Next, we come to the risk factors for an acanthamoeba infection. The risk factors: using tap water to clean and disinfect your contact lenses. And this would include cleaning and disinfecting your contact lens case. Don't do it. Another risk factor would be swimming with contact lenses, especially in freshwater lakes and rivers. However, acanthamoeba keratitis has been found in almost all water sources, from pools to hot tubs, even to showers. Now we're going to go back to that alphabetical glossary and take up where we left off. Another A for you, another A, common eye condition. This is called accommodative dysfunction. This refers to when there's an eye focusing problem, resulting in blurring up close and or far away. It's frequently found in children or adults who have extended near work demands, accommodative dysfunction. Next, another A, anterior uveitis. Anterior uveitis is an inflammation of the middle layer of the eye. This middle layer includes the iris, which is the colored part of the eye, and the adjacent tissue, which is known as the ciliary body. If untreated, says anterior uveitis, if untreated, glaucoma, cataracts, or retinal edema can develop and cause permanent loss of vision. It usually does respond well to treatment, but inflammation can occur. Next, A, astigmatism, a vision condition that causes blurred vision due either to the irregular shape of the cornea, which is the clear front cover of the eye, or sometimes the curvature of the lens inside the eye can cause astigmatism. Moving on to the B's, actually the one B we have, and that is blepharitis. This is an inflammation of the eyelids and eyelashes, which causes red, irritated, itchy eyelids and dandruff-like scales on the eyelashes. And we're going to take the in-depth diversion right here and find out more about the B word, blepharitis. I'll spell it for you, B-L-E-P-H-A-R-I-T-I-S. What causes blepharitis? How is blepharitis diagnosed? How is blepharitis treated? Blepharitis is a common eye disorder caused by either bacteria or a skin condition such as dandruff of the scalp or even rosacea. It affects people of all ages. Although uncomfortable, blepharitis is usually not contagious and generally does not cause any permanent damage to eyesight. Blepharitis is classified into two types. It can be anterior or posterior. The anterior blepharitis occurs in the outside front edge of the eyelid. That's right where the eyelashes attach to the lid. Posterior blepharitis affects the inner edge of the eyelid, the part that touches the eyeball. People with blepharitis may experience a gritty or burning sensation in their eyes, excessive tearing, itching, red or swollen eyelids, dry eyes, or crusting on the eyelids. For some people, blepharitis causes only minor irritation and itching. However, it can lead to more serious symptoms such as blurring of vision, missing or misdirected eyelashes, and inflammation of other eye tissues, particularly of the cornea. By touching and rubbing the irritated area, a secondary infection can also result. In many cases, good hygiene can help control blepharitis. This will include frequently washing your scalp and face, using warm compresses to soak the eyelids, and scrubbing the eyelids. When a bacterial infection is causing or accompanies blepharitis, antibiotics or other medications may be prescribed. So the question, what causes blepharitis? There's two types of blepharitis. First, what causes anterior blepharitis? Commonly caused by bacteria, namely staphylococcal blepharitis, or could also be called by dandruff on your scalp or your eyebrows, which is called seborrheic blepharitis. These bacteria are commonly found on the face and lids, but if they become excessive or the lid area reacts poorly to their presence, an infection may occur. Less commonly, allergies or a mite infestation of the eyelashes can cause anterior blepharitis. And remember, the anterior is the stuff that's on the outside front edge of the eyelid, right near where your eyelashes attach. And the other kind, posterior blepharitis, what causes this? This can occur when the glands of the eyelids irregularly produce oil. This is called meibomian blepharitis. This creates a favorable environment for bacterial growth. Posterior blepharitis can also develop as a result of other skin conditions, such as rosacea or scalp dandruff. Posterior is the kind that's at the inner edge, the part that touches your eyeball. The next question for blepharitis is, how is it diagnosed? Blepharitis can be diagnosed through a comprehensive eye exam. Testing, with special emphasis on the eyelids and the front surfaces of the eyeball, may include the following four things. There will be a patient history to determine any symptoms that the patient is experiencing and any general health problems that may be contributing to the eye problem. The exam might also include an external examination of the eye, including your lid structure, your skin texture, and eyelash appearance. Also, to diagnose it, there might be an evaluation of the lid margins, the base of the eyelashes, and the meibomian gland openings. This would be done using bright light and magnification. Also, as part of the diagnosis, there will be an evaluation and the quantity and quality of the tears you produce to check for any abnormalities. An optometrist can determine the type of blepharitis based on the appearance of the eyelid margins. The different types and symptoms are as follows, and there are four of these different types. First of all, there could be staphylococcal blepharitis. These patients frequently exhibit mildly sticking eyelids, thickened lid margins, and missing and misdirected eyelashes. Another type of blepharitis would be the seborrheic blepharitis. These patients have greasy flakes or scales around the base of eyelashes and a mild redness of the eyelids. The fourth type is ulcerative blepharitis, and these people have matted, hard crusts around the eyelashes. Removing the crusts leaves small sores that ooze and bleed. These patients may also experience eyelash loss, distortion of the front edges of the eyelids, and chronic tearing. In severe cases, the cornea, the transparent front covering of the eyeball, becomes inflamed. The fourth type of blepharitis would be the meibomian blepharitis. These people have a blockage of the oil glands. These are the meibomian glands. The oil glands in the eyelids. They also have poor quality of tears and they would have redness of the lining of the eyelids. Those were the four types of blepharitis. And of course, you may be wondering the next question, how is blepharitis treated? And the treatment depends on the type. The key to treating most types of blepharitis is keeping the lids clean and free of the crusts. Applying warm compresses can loosen the crusts. Then you would gently scrub the eyelids with a mixture of water and baby shampoo, or they do have over-the-counter lid cleansing products. In cases involving bacterial infection, an antibiotic may be prescribed. People with blepharitis might find the following five tips helpful. The first one, if the glands in the eyelids are blocked, massage the eyelids to clean out the oil that's accumulated in the eyelid glands. The second tip, use artificial tear solutions or lubricating ointments if prescribed. The third tip, use anti-dandruff shampoo on the scalp. And the fourth, limit or stop using eye makeup during treatment, as this makes lid hygiene more difficult. And the fifth tip, how is blepharitis treated? Temporarily discontinue wearing contact lenses during your treatment period. Now, note please that some blepharitis cases may require more complex treatment plans. Blepharitis seldom disappears completely. Even with successful treatment, blepharitis may recur. They finish up this part of the article with self-care directions for a warm soak of the eyelids. First of all, wash your hands thoroughly. Next, mix warm water and a small amount of non-irritating baby shampoo, or as I mentioned, they have the commercially prepared lid scrub solution. You can also ask your optometrist or ophthalmologist what they might recommend. The third step, using a clean cloth, a different one for each eye, rub the solution back and forth across the eyelashes and across the edge of the closed eyelid. Next, you would rinse with clear water. And number five, repeat with the other eye. Next, we'll go back to the glossary of common eye and vision conditions. We're starting with the C's now. Cataract, a cloudy or opaque area in the normally clear lens of the eye, which is located, the lens is located behind the iris. The next C condition is pronounced chalazion. I'll spell it for you. It's C-H-A-L-A-Z-I-O-N, a chalazion. This is a slowly developing lump that forms due to blockage and swelling of an oil gland in the eyelid, chalazion. And for this, we're going to take an in-depth diversion to find out more about chalazion. How is a chalazion diagnosed? How is a chalazion treated? A chalazion is generally not an infection. A chalazion often starts out as a very small, red, tender, swollen area of the eyelid. In a few days, it may change to a painless, slow-growing lump the size of a pea. A chalazion is often confused with a sty. Another name for a sty is a herodiolum, which we'll talk about later. So it's not a sty, not a herodiolum. A sty is an infection of an oil gland in the eyelid. A sty produces a red, swollen, painful lump on the edge or the inside of the eyelid and usually occurs closer to the surface of the eyelid than chalazia. Left untreated, a sty can result in the formation of a chalazion. So do not attempt to squeeze or drain the chalazion by yourself. You may need treatment for proper healing. We have some characteristics of a chalazion. There's about maybe six of them. Once again, it's a painless bump or lump in the upper eyelid, or less frequently in the lower eyelid. Characteristic could be caused by thickening of the fluid in the oil glands, those meibomian glands that we're talking about. Tearing and mild irritation may result as the obstructed glands are needed for healthy tears. You might also experience blurred vision if the chalazion is large enough to press against the eyeball. More common in adults than children, chalazions most frequently occur in people between the ages of 30 and 50. The chalazion will disappear without treatment within several weeks to a month, although they often recur. And now we've got some risk factors for you for chalazions. A risk factor would be if you have acne rosacea or if you have chronic blepharitis, which we just talked about, the inflammation of the eyelids often from caused by excess bacteria. Another risk factor for a chalazion would be seborrhea, also tuberculosis, or if you have a viral infection. And another risk factor would be rarely, maybe an indication of an infection or even skin cancer. So how is a chalazion diagnosed? A chalazion is best diagnosed by your eye doctor, who can advise you on treatment options. Some of the testing they might do would include a patient history to determine your symptoms and the presence of any general health problems that may be contributing to this eye problem. We also, you also might have external examination of the eye, including lid structure, skin texture, and eyelash appearance. You might also have to have an evaluation of the lid margins, the base of the eyelashes, and the oil gland openings. They would do this using a bright light and magnification. And the final part of the chalazion part is, how is a chalazion treated? The good news is that many chalazia require minimum medical treatment, and they clear up on their own in a few weeks or a month. You can, in the meantime, apply warm compresses to the eyelid for 10 to 15 minutes. You can do this 4 to 6 times a day for several days. The warm compresses may help soften the hardened oil that is blocking the ducts and allow drainage and healing. You can create a warm compress by dipping a soft, clean cloth in warm water and then wringing it out, although you may prefer a commercially available reusable heat mask. Remoisten the cloth frequently to keep it wet and warm if you use the moist cloth. You can also gently massage the external eyelid several minutes each day to help promote drainage. Once the chalazion drains on its own, keep the area clean and keep your hands away from your eyes. If the chalazion does not drain and heal within a month, contact your eye doctor. Again, do not attempt to squeeze or pop the chalazion, as you may inadvertently do more damage. Next, we'll go back to the rest of the C's, and actually we'll try to get through the rest of the alphabet as much as we can. The next C is color vision deficiency. You might know it as color blindness. This is the inability to distinguish certain shades of color. The one thing I didn't know is that very few people are completely colorblind. Color vision deficiency. Next, we have computer vision syndrome, a group of eye and vision-related problems that result from prolonged computer use. And this is remedied, as we mentioned in a program recently, by the 20/20/20 rule. And now that we are in year number 2020, it's even easier to remember. The 20/20/20 rule. Every 20 minutes you're working on a computer, take your eyes away from the screen for 20 seconds and look at something that's 20 feet away. The next C term is conjunctivitis. This is a swelling or inflammation of the conjunctiva, which is a thin, transparent layer of tissue that lines the inner surface of the eyelid, and this covers the white part of the eye. Causes may or may not be infectious. This is conjunctivitis. Next, we have another C, convergence insufficiency. This is a term used to describe an eye coordination problem in which the eyes drift outward when you're reading or doing close work. Convergence insufficiency. Next, we have corneal abrasions, a cut or scratch on the cornea, which is the clear front portion of the eye. This results in pain, light sensitivity, and tearing with the possibility of infection. Next, we have crossed eyes, or this is also called strabismus. Crossed eyes is a condition in which both eyes do not look at the same place at the same time. It usually occurs in people who have poor eye muscle control or are very farsighted. Going into the D's, we have diabetic retinopathy, a condition occurring in people with diabetes. This causes progressive damage to the retina, the light-sensitive lining at the back of the eye. Next, we have dry eye, a condition in which there are insufficient tears to lubricate and nourish the eye. Moving on to E, we have eye coordination. Eye coordination is the ability to work together as a team. Each of your eyes sees a slightly different image. Your brain, by a process called fusion, blends these two images into one three-dimensional picture. Good eye coordination keeps the eyes in proper alignment. Poor eye coordination results from a lack of adequate vision development or from improperly developed eye muscle control. Eye coordination. Next, we've got a couple of F's for you. Farsightedness, which is also called hyperopia. This is a vision condition in which distant objects are seen clearly. Farsightedness, you can see far away, but close objects are blurred. Another F, we have floaters and spots. These are the shadowy images that appear in the field of vision caused by particles actually floating in the fluid that fills the inside of the eye. Next, we come to a G. Glaucoma is a group of disorders leading to progressive damage to the optic nerve. It's characterized by the loss of nerve tissue that results in vision loss, a serious one, glaucoma. Next, the H. hordeolum, which is another word for a sty. H-O-R-D-E-O-L-U-M, hordeolum. It's an infection of an oil gland in the eyelid. Next, keratitis. This is an inflammation or swelling of the cornea, which is the clear front cover of the eye. And then we have a similar word, keratoconus. It's K-E-R-A-T-O-C-O-N-U-S, keratoconus. This eye disorder causes progressive thinning and bulging of the cornea, which is the clear front portion of the eye. It results in high astigmatism and blurred vision that may need to be corrected with a specialty contact lens, keratoconus. Next, L, lazy eye, also called amblyopia, is the loss or lack of development of clear vision in one or both eyes. This can be caused by eye turn, which is strabismus, a high prescription that has gone uncorrected with glasses or contacts, an ocular structural abnormality. Eyeglasses or contact lenses cannot fully correct the reduced vision caused by lazy eye if the vision was not developed within the critical period. Another L, we have learning-related vision problems. This is any vision problem that interferes with reading or learning. The M, that's a big one you know about, I'm sure, macular degeneration. This is an eye disease that affects the macula, which is the center of the light-sensitive retina at the back of the eye. This causes loss of central vision. Next, we have migraine with aura. This is a type of severe headache accompanied by various visual symptoms, migraine with aura. The next one is another M word, myokymia. Myokymia of the lid is a unilateral and uncontrollable lid twitch or a tic that's not caused by disease or pathology. Myokymia. It's thought to be brought on by stress and other similar issues. It does resolve on its own with time. So next we're going on to N's now. There are two of them. Nearsightedness, which is myopia. Nearsightedness is a vision condition in which close objects are seen clearly. You can see well close up, but objects further away are blurred. Next one is nystagmus. This is a vision condition in which the eyes make repetitive, uncontrolled movements, often resulting in reduced vision. Nystagmus, uncontrolled movements of the eye. In the O department, we have three of them. Ocular allergies. This is an abnormal response of sensitive eyes to contact with allergens. Ocular hypertension is an increase in the pressure inside the eye above the range considered normal without any detectable changes in vision or any damage to the structures of the eye. Ocular hypertension. The next one is called ocular migraine. We just talked about migraine with aura. Ocular migraine is the visual disturbance, similar to what can occur with a migraine, but it doesn't have the headache to go along with it, just the visual disturbance. And this visual disturbance can be alarming. Next one, a P for you, pinguecula, P-I-N-G-U-E-C-U-L-A, pinguecula. Abnormal growth of tissue on the conjunctiva, which is a clear membrane that covers the white part of the eye. Another P word, presbyopia. This is an age-related vision condition in which the eye gradually uses the ability to focus on near objects. Okay, the next one is a P word, but it's pronounced like a T word. It's called pterygium. Pterygium. It's spelled P-T-E-R-Y-G-I-U-M. Pterygium. This is an abnormal growth of tissue on the conjunctiva and the adjacent cornea. This is the clear front surface of the eye. And another P word, again, sounds like a T word, ptosis. It's spelled P-T-O-S-I-S. This is a drooping of the upper eyelid. We have, I think, three R words for you. Retinal detachment, a tearing or separation of the retina, which is the light-sensitive lining at the back of the eye. This means it's separated from the underlying tissue and possibly would result in vision loss. Another R word, retinitis pigmentosa. This is a group of inherited disorders of the retina. This causes poor night vision first and a progressive loss of side vision. Another R word is retinoblastoma. This is a rare type of eye cancer that occurs in young children. It develops in the retina, which is a light-sensitive lining at the back of the eye. Once again, that word is retinoblastoma. And then an S word is a subjunctival hemorrhage, an accumulation of blood underneath the conjunctiva, which is a clear membrane covering the white part of the eye. Actually, that's as far as the alphabet goes in this glossary of vision conditions. So in today's program, we've gone from A almost to Z, covering many, many more common vision conditions. I do hope you've learned something new, maybe. So to end the program today, I have a quote for you to think about. If everything seems under control, you're just not going fast enough. This was said by Mario Andretti. Remember him? He's an Italian-born American race car driver. He was born in 1940. He retired from racing in 1994. Thank you for listening. I do hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.